welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stick and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
What's going to take it for him to get going here in this fourth?
He has to use the mid-range. He has to use the floaters. He has to get layups that way.
On cue. The setup. On cue is right. Inside. Hard to the rack. Knocked away. Great defense that time by Watson. He gets it to the other end. Jokic the assist. 6-0 run, Denver.
Murray.
That's the mid-range, Rich.
Murray again. To the hole!
It is a one-possession game now.
Caldwell pokes on James. Davis with the screen. LeBron, three. Bullseye! Shot clock at 6. James over Gordon, three. Sticks it! Sticks it! Shot clock at 4. Caldwell Pope defends. LeBron chiseling, leaning, and... Wow! On the play. Rocket 4, screened by Jokic. Knocked away by LeBron. The steal. The drive. LeBron James drops the sledgehammer. 3-point game. Jokic the other way. The pass down low. Gordon back to Porter. Tied.
Oh my goodness.
And Lakers by 2. Denver the other way. Davis will defend. The screen, LeBron comes up on him. Here is for the tie.
The mid-range. The mid-range.
I love it. Don't call it.
Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime.
Murray makes a move.
Oh, wow. Instant classic at Ball Arena last night. Whew. This is going to be one of those ones where there were about 19,000 people there last night. In about 10 years, there'll be about 200,000 to claim that they were there.
Right?
What a game. What a comeback. The Nuggets down by 20 in the third quarter. Pull off their largest comeback in Nuggets playoff history. Capped off at the end. Buzzer beater by Jamal Murray. Also the first ever Nuggets playoff game winning buzzer beating shot. So It was all there, all the elements of a classic, and Michael Malone leaning on his guy, Jamal.
For those that have been following us for a long time, that's Jamal Murray right there. I mean, he can struggle. He sees one go in, and he is he's never shying away from the moment, the spotlight, and that was just an incredible play.
Here are the numbers to back up what Malone just said. Murray, 3 of 16 shooting for 6 points through the first three quarters. In the fourth, 6 of 8 shooting, 14 points, and scored the Nuggets' final 6 points.
Just absolutely amazing. To be able to have that poor a performance through three quarters, and then to be able to flip the switch, forget it all, and essentially... what, scored the last 6 points of the game? And I tell you what, it just is, it blows me away that you've got that kind of intestinal fortitude, belief, and that you can develop amnesia at that point of the game. It just says a lot about Murray and the guy that we have, you know, playing guard for us.
Here's a Murray's reaction to the game winner.
I jumped pretty high, I faded a lot, and I just lost my balance and fell. And I just saw the ball over the rim. I think AD was in my way, or somebody was in my way. And I just heard everybody scream. That's how I know it went in. So it was a pretty cool moment.
Something about fourth quarters, game 2s at home against the Lakers. Last year in game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, Jamal had 23 in the fourth quarter. So
it's amazing.
So all you other guards who, you know, get so excited about going to stupid All-Star games... meanwhile, this is the guy who on the biggest stage under the brightest lights continues to deliver.
Yes. I tell you what, I mean, he just flat does. And it's awesome. It is awesome to see it. It is awesome to watch them respond. I tell you what, it is flat out incredible. And just the overall toughness, Mike, the energy it takes to overcome a 20-point deficit in the third period or third quarter. And to go through that and to still, you know, and to have, LeBron hit a couple daggers and some things not go your way as you're making that comeback and to continue to grind. Just overall, like when you want to talk about, you talk about talent, you can talk about talent the way they play. Toughness, to me, this team is the toughest team in the NBA, bar none. No question.
Couldn't say it better.
Nope. Third down.
So the Avalanche, your turn tonight, Avs, 7:30. They'll look to even up the series and regain home ice advantage as they take on Winnipeg. And for all the griping about the goaltending, Alexander Georgiev, some of the defensemen like Josh Manson admit they need to be better.
Yeah, you just do. It's part of being a professional, I think, right? It's just figuring out what went wrong and how you can be mentally sharper. You know, like I said, I did feel like offensively I was contributing and making plays and whatever, but you know, really, that's not my game. My game that's kept me in the NHL is putting points on the board. It's keeping pucks out of the net best I can. So I think I got to get back to that a little bit and just getting harder to play against the front of the net and just make a little bit better reads and let the offense come from there. I think, like you said, I did feel like I played a pretty good game but made a few mistakes and ended up in the back far net because of it.
So we got a text from an Avs fan who said, geez, listening to all the talk around the Avs the last couple of days, should they even bother showing up tonight? Maybe they should just forfeit. I feel real good about them tonight.
Forfeiting?
No, I feel good about their chances tonight.
Oh, I thought you felt good about them forfeiting.
No, this team has got too many veterans, too many guys that have won championships in this league to think that they're going to crumble after one loss, to think that four losses to Winnipeg this year will get in their heads so much that they'll be paralyzed? No. Now, the goaltending, sure, that's an issue. But I was very encouraged about how they went after Connor Hellebuyck the other day. Guy who's supposed to be the runaway winner of the Vezina Trophy for the best goaltender this year. You always talk about, like, quarterbacks, right? The Peyton Mannings,
sure.
The Tom Brady's. They're the ones that, man, they could have all kinds of pressure coming from the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And they handle that, right? They coolly stand up in the pocket, move into the pocket, step up. What do all the great quarterbacks admit gets to them? Pressure at their feet.
Yeah.
I don't care how cool and collected a quarterback you are, if you have pressure at your feet, that rattles even the coolest of quarterbacks. And the same thing you saw against Hellebuyck the other night. The Avs got a lot of traffic in front of them. And he never looked comfortable. He looked rattled. If the Avs can do more of that tonight, there's no reason why they can't score another four or five goals.
And then it
is a matter of, you know, you got to limit the other team to four, but
yeah,
I see a formula.
Right. I think what was that Josh Manson that was talking about, you know, not pinching in and not being offensive as a defensive player. We talked about, you know, your theory or my theory is you start to do things you shouldn't do simply because you know who's in the net for you. So we're going to have to outscore them. And what he's saying is, man, we can't play with that lack of confidence in our guy. Like, he's got to do his job, but I've got to do my job better. And I agree, man. You've got to play defense, and you got to be solid. You know, and you got to help your goaltender out.
Okay, we'll see what happens coming up tonight, 7:30, game number two. See if the Avs can even up the series. Hey, the NFL draft is upon us, and of course, we're all wondering what the Broncos are going to do with that number 12 pick. Even more intrigued now after the trade for Zach Wilson yesterday. Hey, join us this Thursday starting at 4 for our NFL draft party live from Dave and Buster's in Denver from 4 to 6. We'll do a special roundtable hosted by Zach By featuring Mark Schlereth, Brandon Stokely, Philip Lindsay, and then from 6 to 10, NFL insider James Palmer, Cecil Lammy, John Davis. They'll take you through the rest of the NFL draft. That's Thursday, starting at 4, live from Dave and Buster's in Denver. Lot to react to. Nuggets big win. Avs, can they even it up? And, of course, the Zach Wilson trade as well. In fact, coming up next, is this a good move? It seems like the reaction has been very negative this morning from what we've heard. Why? That's next.
With an advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and trusted partnership, Comcast Business powers more businesses than anyone. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Get started with internet and security for your small business for $49.99 a month for 12 months with a 2-year contract.
Plus, ask how to get up to an $800 prepaid card with qualifying internet. Call today. Ends 5/5/24. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 50 megabits per second internet and security edge. Eco bill and auto pay required. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Oh my goodness, so much happening. Nuggets thriller last night. Avs trying to bounce back tonight. The intrigue of the Zach Wilson trade and what it'll mean for the Broncos on draft night. Oh, so much to react to. Let's get to some of the texts here on the Ramoslaw.com text line. I love this one. Hockey Mark has it right. The Avs do need to help the goaltender out. They need to help him out of the net, out of the locker room, out of the building, out of the city, and out of the league. The Avs are not winning anything with that guy.
Yeah, I have, you know, the Chicken Little in me, Mike. I got some, you know, whoa, this guy is falling. But I do, in regards to the Avs, there's a little bit of let's wave the white flag. Like, our goaltending is, they're going to have to be so good. They're going to have to be, the team is going to have to be so good. Now, the only reason I don't wave the white flag is because you do have McKinnon. You do have Chewy. You do have, you know, Ratnan. You do have Lekkonen. You do have McCarr. You do, like, you are loaded with talent. Is that enough? All that talent enough to make up for
your goaltending?
Yeah.
Especially since it looks like Georgiev's going to be back there between the pipes again, because you'd think they'd love to give Justus Onnen a shot, but he's sick. Missed practice again yesterday. And so the likelihood of him going tonight, it seems pretty remote. They called up Ivan Prosvetov from the Eagles. But again, you're going to throw him right in there. I know that for most Avalanche fans, you're like, sure, why not? Anybody. Right. Anybody but Georgiev. ABG. Anybody but Georgiev. But it, come on, you got to, you know how coaches think. And they'll be like, well, you know, let's just tighten it up. And, you know, we'll be better in front of him. And, you know, he is the experienced guy. And, you know, the other guys are raw and young and untested, and so better to go with the devil, you know, right? All that. So I think all signs point to Georgiev being the guy.
You know what he is? He's the anti-Jamal Murray.
How so?
Well, Jamal Murray is having a horrible game, and he can flip the switch, hit one shot, as Michael Malone said, see one go through, and then he's like, all right, I'm back on. Where Georgiev lets one slip through, and he's like, it's over. It's over. There's nothing I can do.
On the RamosLab.com text line, guys, kudos to Charles Barkley for calling out Lakers coach Darvin Ham after the game. Yeah, he did, and thank goodness. So did you hear Darvin Ham? I was caught up in the glow and the adrenaline after the game, so I couldn't go right to sleep. So I was watching some of the postgame show on TNT, and they had part of Darvin Ham's press conference. Here's what he said, okay? Now, as you listen to this, keep in mind that in the previous 9 Laker losses to the Nuggets, the Lakers had the free throw advantage in all 9 of those
all
games.
All 9.
That this season, the Lakers attempted 500 more free throws than their opponents, which was By over 500, the difference between the Lakers' free throw advantage and the next team in the NBA.
Correct.
500 more free throw attempts. So keep this in mind as you hear Darvin Ham say this, quote, some tough calls, some tough non-calls, but you can't use any of that as an excuse. You got to go out there and be ready to make plays, whether the whistle gets blown or not. It's getting real tricky. You go through the season, games being officiated one way, then you get to the playoffs, and I guess it's left up to the interpretation of the 3 individual guys that's doing the job out there. He complained. LeBron complained.
Right.
D'Angelo Russell complained. And the whole time I'm like, you're kidding me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this an example of, and I suppose this applies to a lot of things in society, that when you enable somebody so much.
Yes.
They get used to it.
Yeah.
And so when something doesn't go their way that they've been enabled for so long, they're blind to it. And they end up saying something stupid like this.
Yeah, because
that leaves all of us going, what?
Because the games have been officiated in such a manner that they always get the beneficial whistle. They're used to having the whistle lean in their favor. So they expect it to lean in their favor. And, you know,
and when kudos, it doesn't, they're offended.
Right. Kudos to Michael Malone for being subtle and speaking to the officiating, speaking to Michael Silver. Adam Silver. Michael's the writer.
Right.
Adam Silver speaking to the officiating of the NBA by saying, hey, man, you know, like, well, you got it right
this
here.
This was after game one.
I think in the second half, we had a total of zero free throw attempts, you know, which is obviously concerning when you consider all the, you know, we had 30 in the paint we scored, and we had plenty of field goal attempts in the paint. So it's not like we're just settling for jump shots. We are attacking. We are posting. We are playing to the rim. And you would think that that would warrant a few free throws, at least two. We'll take two.
But the Lakers have been enabled so much by the NBA that when the game is actually called, you know, the way it should be called,
right,
they're flat out dumbfounded. They can't believe it.
Right.
Because they've been enabled for so long that when something like this happens, they're offended. They're literally offended at the idea that they got a bad whistle.
Like with LeBron James hooking, just elbowing somebody, Murray, to get past him, and then somebody barely touching his hand after the first foul occurred when he just, you know, yanked him by. So, yeah, you're 100% right. They're offended by it. They're disgusted by it. They can't believe it. The Los Angeles Lakers are victims.
Oh, boy, yeah.
They are the Karens of the NBA.
Boom. The Karens and the Todds.
Yeah, the Karens and the Todds of the NBA.
And that's Todd with 1D. What's trending coming up next?
Here's Schlereth and Evans with What's Trending right now.
Jamal Murray, the hero. In the Nuggets, thrilling 101-99 comeback win, down 20, the biggest comeback in Nuggets playoff history, the first game-winning buzzer beater in Nuggets playoff history. Jamal Murray, what a moment. Makes the shot right in front of his own bench, goes tumbling into the bench. Poor Anthony Davis is caught up in the bench. He's trying to get out of there as the Nuggets are just mobbing Jamal. What a great scene. And then it was just a few seconds later that a breathless Jamal went on TNT.
Man, I just want to give all the credit to my teammates, coaches, pops. I told my teammates when I was struggling, like, I'm going to look for y'all. I'm going to look for y'all. And every single one of them told me to keep shooting. Keep shooting. Be aggressive. Keep shooting. Even when I was throwing up that bull floater. You know, they told me just stay aggressive and keep looking for it. Keep hunting it. I had the ball with a few seconds left, and I knew once I made a couple, you know, the next one should go down as well.
That BS floater, except he, it was not bleeped at the time.
No,
so
it was not.
It was awesome. You know what I respect so much about Jamal Murray is that, you know, the one thing I love about the playoffs is it separates the pretenders from the contenders. And, you know, there's so many players who can put up numbers in the regular season, maybe never even get a chance to play in the postseason. But when you're in the postseason, you know what? The postseason doesn't care. It doesn't care about where you were drafted. The postseason doesn't care about how much money you make. The postseason doesn't care about your sneaker deal. The postseason is the postseason. And some can handle it, and a lot of them can't. And not only can this guy handle it, but his ability to shake off a horrendous game and still come through is next level elite stuff.
A couple things I love. The bench coming off, the energy and the defense that they played as bench players. And there was a lot of, you know, there's, you know, a lot of minutes in a game like that. There was a lot of minutes that the bench played that were critical minutes, okay? So I thought that was great. Rebounding. We talked about rebounding being a key going into this game. The second shot opportunities, because the Lakers, you know, three-point, they were on fire for most of the game on three-pointers. Their percentage was high. I mean, the Nuggets shot like 20% from three-point. I don't have it right in front of me. But three-point shots, the Lakers had a higher field goal percentage. Those extra opportunities with the basketball is what kept them in that game and allowed them to crawl back into that game. And then in the moment, when the moment got big, I kept saying to myself as I was watching it, eventually they're going to start missing some shots, right? Eventually it's got to happen. And, of course, it started happening in the fourth quarter. A couple of misses, a couple of bad shots, a couple of turnovers. Great defense by the Nuggets forcing those turnovers. It was a picture-perfect coaching. For all you people that don't like coaching or don't think Michael Malone can coach, that was coaching. That's what he talks about all the time, and that was the difference. And that's what gave them the ability to come back from playing down.
Totally schooling Darvin Ham. Totally schooling him. Meanwhile, just the hypocrisy, the tone deafness, the pot calling the kettle black. LeBron James after the game. LeBron James, the Lakers, LeBron James complaining about the officiating.
I don't understand what's going on in the replay center, to be honest. I think I said it this year or last year or whatever. D-Lo clearly gets hit in the face on a drive. The replay center is going to go. It doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense to me. It bothers me. Sorry I didn't ask you a question, but that is like. And then I just saw what happened with the Sixers Nick game too. What are we doing?
It's not fair.
Jeez, Willikers.
Poor LeBron. How has he gotten to this point of his career with everybody against him?
I don't know. It's just amazing that that guy has never gotten a call.
No.
He just doesn't get a call.
The Nuggets were 2 for 2 on challenges.
I wonder if like you said, you know, the whole kind of victim or entitlement. You ever think he goes back and listens to himself and thinks,
no.
Gosh, I sound like a toolbox.
No. No. No.
I don't think so either.
Do the entitled tend to think that way?
No.
No.
They don't.
They don't. That's what makes
him about D-bag.
That's what makes him entitled.
Yeah.
The Avalanche tonight. See what the Avs are made of as they get ready for game number 2. We saw yesterday what the Nuggets are made of. We know the Nuggets have that championship gene. Ross Colton and the Avs, do you?
Yeah, no, he's our guy, and you know, obviously, maybe he'd want some back. But again, that's on us. We got to do a better job of, you know, limiting the turnovers, boxing guys out in front, not kind of giving them some great A's that they had. So, yeah, that's for us to kind of clean up in front of him. But you know, he's battled for us all year. He's, you know, he's a warrior. So, you know, for him, we'll just turn the page, and you know, we'll be good to go for game 2.
You know, it's funny because the hockey credo, right? You know, you got your guys back. Right, and throughout this entire season, second half of the season, the Avs, it's funny, the commentary surrounding Georgiev, it's like, you know, hey, Bednar will be like, hey, you know, we've got to be tighter defensively, you know, we can't be turning the puck up over, but, you know, at some point you need your goaltender to make a save or two. And then you just hear Colton, hey, you know, I'm sure there's a couple you'd like to have back, but, you know, we got to be better.
I mean,
come on. It's code for our goaltender stinks and we don't trust him. No matter how you want to dress it up.
Oh, you always say that, though. You know, hey, we got to do our job and we got, like, that's the way it goes. But, yeah, definitely. There has got to be just about zero confidence in your goaltending right now.
All right, so how do you go about your business today? If it is Georgiev, and with Justus Onanen still sick and not practicing yesterday, signs seem to point to Georgiev being back in between the pipes. How do you handle it? How do you handle it as a coach? How do you handle it as a teammate? Do you leave him alone? Do you go out of your way to talk to him, pump him up? What do you do?
Well, you're stuck, yeah, which I don't, you don't have a clear answer.
Right.
Well, that doesn't
I don't
that
I,
doesn't help.
Listen, man. Well, what do you want me to say?
I don't know. Lie
hey,
to
you're
me.
Gonna be okay.
Lie to me.
You're gonna be okay.
Tell hey, me it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, we got your back, buddy. No, I mean, it, to me, it's like, hey, listen, do your freaking job. Yeah, you're out here sucking water and letting, you know, when you see the puck and you're one-on-one, you got to stop it.
So instead of mama-catting him?
Yeah.
Get in his face, challenge him?
Well, it's a different generation, but that's how I was coached, so what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I don't know, like, you, dude, we scored 6 on the road against the best goaltender in hockey.
Yeah? That should be enough.
Right.
One more here I want to bring to your attention.
Mm-hmm. Let it eat. What do you got?
You know, the Rockies are playing baseball.
I saw that last night.
I mean, my goodness.
I did check in on that.
Totally just.
Yeah, are you sure they're playing baseball?
I don't know.
Is that what they're playing?
I don't know. Okay, I don't know what you want to call it.
Questioning.
But I got to pass this along to you. So check this out. The Rockies became the first team to trail in each of its first 23 games of the season since the Cincinnati Reds did it in 1931.
So basically, they're creeping. They're like cheap underpants. They're creeping up because they had something from like 1890 earlier, right?
Right, right.
So now they're all the way up to 1931.
Wow.
Eventually, we'll be out of the Depression. It was 31. It's close,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. We're in we're in the Rockies Dust Bowl era.
Right.
I mean, so, it's just holy smokes. It's like it's so bad that everything they're doing we haven't seen in baseball since the 1800s and the aughts, the 1900s. Right. Holy smokes. Anyway.
By the way, Orioles winners 7 of their last 8.
Boom.
Took sole possession of the AL East yesterday.
Boom. Ooh, that's our team.
That's our team, guys.
That's our adopted team. Way to go, O's. Keep it going. Hashtag, yeah. What do we call it? Hashtag Birdland?
Yeah. How's Stokely and Josh, the Atlanta Braves, doing with their...
How's that rags to riches story going in Atlanta right now? Fan Flyaway's back. We're going to be sending you, hopefully, and a guest, to a road game for the championship round in June. What you'll get, 2 tickets to a game, round-trip airfare for 2 from Denver to a destination to be determined. Let's just put it the Eastern Conference finalist. 2 nights hotel and $500. Head to denversports.com/thefanflyway to register and claim your special offer from Sport Clips. Good luck. Coming up, a special edition of Telestrator Tuesday with Zach Wilson, now a Bronco. I tasked Mark with the job of looking at Zach Wilson and, well, what does the film say? That's next.
It's Telestrator Tuesday.
John Elway, that was a bootleg pass. We talked about the cross. And remember I said how they run those crosses on you? They run those crosses, then you jump up on those crosses, and they get that post in behind you.
Steve takes you into the classroom using the exclusive game film only the Broncos coaches have access to.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with Telestrator Tuesday.
Well, was not planning on doing a Telestrator Tuesday today, as thought, Mark, you summed it up perfectly yesterday. Can we get on with the damn draft? We've exhausted every talking point possible, and then the Broncos go and trade for Zach Wilson. It's like, oh, okay. That kind of changes things a little bit. So for Telestrator Tuesday today, I gave you the homework assignment at looking at some Zach Wilson game tape. And I specifically picked a game in early October. This was one of the first few games that Zach Wilson was starting after the Aaron Rodgers season-ending Achilles. They were hosting the Chiefs. And in this game, a 23-20 win for Kansas City, Wilson went 28 of 39 for 245 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no interceptions. What'd the film say?
One, you can always tell how a team feels about you as an offense by the way they game plan you. And one of the things right off the bat that was apparent was they don't have a lot of respect for the Jets' ability to block anybody, so they're going to bring pressure. They were going to pressure the quarterback. And I thought Zach Wilson handled the pressure exceptionally well. I mean, he got the ball out a bunch of stick routes, a bunch of quick throws, a bunch of swings. But because of the pressure, that's what he was coached to do. Get the ball out of your hand. And there were probably five or six drops in that particular game. So you look at that, you know, completion percentage. What'd you say it was?
28 of 39.
28 of 39. There was at least four drops, like four legit drops in there, maybe five. So it was even better than the stats would tell you it was. But I thought he was pressured. I thought he had the play action stuff pretty well. And I'm telling you, in the face of duress, when he escaped the pocket and made plays, and he did that several times, he was really good. But what I was most impressed with was his ability to dump the ball, throw the ball under duress, throw the stick routes, throw the little, you know, hook routes, while having somebody in your face about ready to hit you, and then a few anticipatory throws down the sideline, down the seam, a couple of man-to-man coverage situations because of the blitz that were covered, and he threw guys open. So I thought he played in that particular game. I thought he played really well. And they had the it was 20-20. He gets sacked, fumbles. They recover the fumble. They give it over. You know, they have to give it over to the Chiefs. The Chiefs end up eating 7 minutes and 24 seconds on the clock and end up kicking a field goal, 23-20. So against that Jets defense. So I tell you what, I thought he played well enough to win. I thought he played a pretty damn good ball game. And there were a lot of things to like: athleticism, arm talent, and quick decision making. And like we've talked about, some of the issues that we had with Russell Wilson, inability to throw a guy open. You know, when you see a guy covered, you're just off of him. And Zach Wilson saw a couple guys covered and threw the ball in the only place where his receivers could catch it. So throwing guys open, another something he did well.
I would say on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, reaction from Broncos fans to this deal, probably running 70-30 negative.
Yeah, sure, I understand that.
Here's some on the text line. Zach Wilson move is putting lipstick on a pig and calling it a model. Broncos are trash. Another one. Name the talented quarterback with problems between the ears that became a success later in his career. Oh, that's right. You can't. George, Jay Cutler, Ryan Leaf were all busts and never changed their stripes. Wilson is one too. Yet another example of an arrogant coach thinking he can do better where others have failed. What a waste of a sixth rounder, Derek in Broomfield.
Well, I don't know what he is between the ears. Immaturity, yes, all those things. But I played with Rich Gannon, and Rich Gannon will be the first to tell you that he was awful early in his career, and he became an MVP. Now, did he have work ethic? Did he care? Yes, all those things. So maybe that's not an apt, you know, comparison. But again, do I think that Zach Wilson is an arrogant, you know, piece of garbage, or do I think he's an immature, you know, player? And the other thing is like what we've had here, just an accountability factor. What it takes to win, how you have to prepare, the culture that you're trying to establish. Has that been a part of what the Jets are since they drafted him? So the thing that baffles me is that you see a guy who, I'll give it to you, he's failed, and yeah, he's made some really piss poor decisions. I get it. I get all that. But have you not looked at the track record of draft picks? Have you not looked at the first round? People that go apoplectic because you think all of a sudden, now we're not going to get Bo Nix. You ever watch Bo Nix at Auburn? When he was playing against SEC defenses as opposed to, you know, Pac-2 defenses? You ever see his games there? You ever watch him? Oh, my gosh, we're not going to get a chance at this, you know, ass kicker. You watch it? Did you pay attention during the 2021 draft? Oh, by the way, the 2022 draft that only had Kenny Pickett going in the first round, how's his career going? Have you paid attention?
Good job. Telestrator Tuesday, taking a look at the potential. Ugly word.
Mm-hmm.
Potential, but that's what the Broncos are counting on, trying to get him some football rehab and see if they can't tap into what made this guy the number two overall pick just a few years ago. Got a question here on the RamosLive.com text line. Guys, was last night a case of the Nuggets coming back to win or the Lakers choking away the loss?
You know, I was going to ask you this question earlier today. How much did altitude and home court advantage play in to that dramatic 20-point comeback?
Some. But no, I don't put it on that.
Although, did I
see Nick Wright, our buddy Nick Wright, come out after the game and say, I know there's nothing they can do about it right now, but the NBA has to look into this altitude thing?
No, he didn't.
I'm not kidding. He suggested the idea that the Nuggets have too much of an unfair advantage playing at altitude.
What would you like us to do?
And that they need to, I don't know, move them? Move them to sea level? How preposterous is that? Talk about waving the white flag. Jeez. Can't beat these guys, so now we're just going to have to blame it on altitude. Hey, there were plenty of Nugget teams, plenty of good Nugget teams. Last time I checked, we've always been at 5280 here, so those teams weren't able to win championships. Those teams weren't able to pull off 20-point comebacks in the playoffs. Maybe that was a spoof account. I don't know, but I could have sworn I saw it.
Wow.
Maybe I got spoofed. But
maybe you did. Maybe you did. I definitely think the Lakers were, I mean, I think they were overwhelmed by the comeback in general. But, altitude is real, man.
It's funny because I do a running notebook during the course of these games. And, you know, I just have a legal pad on my lap and I'm writing down thoughts and notes and observations. And I went back and I looked at what I wrote in the third quarter. Okay, it's 4:38 left in the third, and their 20-point lead is down to 13. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was right after the Lakers had had a lazy turnover. I wrote, the Lakers have gotten lax, adaisical on offense. Nuggets are getting some energy. And then early in the fourth, when the Nuggets cut it to 5, I wrote, Lakers are tight. No one wants to take a shot. A Nuggets comeback feels inevitable. I wrote, feels inevitable. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
It did. And the Lakers, this is why you don't recover from this loss. They played a perfect game. For basically 2.5 quarters, they played the perfect game. They were disciplined. They were staying with their game plan. They had completely taken the crowd out of the game. They were playing at a tempo that was comfortable for them, was frustrating, and kind of lulling the Nuggets to sleep. And then right around that stretch there, they got lazy. And they started to jack up some threes, a couple of wild passes. They got lazy. And they deviated from what they had been doing. And then once they got lazy and got a little lackadaisical and missed some shots, took themselves out of their rhythm, and then the Nuggets started to come back, the energy in the building started to pick up, that's when that lackadaisical attitude got replaced by tightness, and they played tight. That was the prevent defense in football. That was the dreaded 2-goal lead in hockey. That's what we saw yesterday from the Nuggets. So in answering the question, the fourth quarter was all about the Nuggets going out and winning it. And what we have seen time after time with these guys, their ability to come through in the clutch. But the opening given to the Nuggets to come back in this game was absolutely the Lakers choking, absolutely choking this game away.
You know, it was interesting because I'm sitting on my couch as, you know, Russell is just raining threes and LeBron's hitting threes. And it's just like, I mean, they got guys coming off the bench knocking down threes. And I just kept saying to myself, and we're clanking them. Like, I was like, okay, how about we put the red light on everybody not named Joker or Porter Jr. on shooting threes? Like, can we just do that? Like, how about we just go for two and try to get a turnover and do some of those things, right? And then I'm watching that thing kind of just transpire. And I kept thinking to myself, eventually they got to start missing some of these. Eventually, whatever it is, whether it's defensive pressure, whether it's, you know, tightness. And when they started clanging a few of them, I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
Like, here we go.
You could feel it.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
You just, when you're playing a game like that, you can't let up against a team like the Nuggets because they're not going to quit.
Mm.
You know, they're going to keep coming back. Michael Malone, you know, he said it. This team's not going
to
quit.
It speaks to guys just trusting the process, staying with it, making the necessary adjustments. Then guys stepping up. You got to make plays to get back in it and win a game when you're down by 20. And we had a lot of guys step up and make big play after big play. So, yeah, I mean, we did our job.